At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass. Thank you so much for tuning in and for subscribing to the podcast. I will say this for the first time in quite a while. Please rate and review the podcast wherever you do subscribe to this podcast, whether it be on the Apple Podcast feed wherever you find it. It does help the algorithm, and it helps us reach a new audience. I've seen some good reviews up there. 5-star reviews, very, very helpful. Now, this past week, I was actually able to conduct an interview on the official Century Media Records website for the new At the Gates album, The Nightmare of Being, record release party. It was a special live stream interview that I did with Tomas Lindberg of At the Gates, the vocalist of the band. It was really awesome to do so. We got to chat about the album, and the video is available now on the Century Media Records website. I was very stoked to be a part of it, and thank you so much to Skateboard Marketing Munzee over there for hooking me up with that, as well as everyone at Century Media Records. It was really, really cool, and now, what I'm going to do is, if you did not get a chance to watch the video, you can now listen to the full audio, unedited version of it. This is the full interview, and it's even breaking down, track by track, the album. So here it is, my unedited conversation with Tomas Lindberg of At the Gates from their new album, The Nightmare of Being. Let's break it down, man. Thanks for listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
The Nightmare of Being out today on Century Media. I am joined. My name is Kevin Deers, by the way. I do a show called Metal Shop 99.9 KISW in Seattle. And here on the Century Media stream, I'm joined by the vocalist of At the Gates, Tomas Lindberg. How you doing, man?
All good.
Dude, so I'm in Seattle. I'm assuming you're in Sweden then?
Yeah. Right in Gothenburg, as usual. Yeah.
Yes. So it's a huge day for you guys. 7th studio album. How are you feeling today, man?
I'm feeling like it. Yeah, finally.
Yeah.
You know, the build up for a record and whatever, and now people finally can hear it. It's always, you know, like we're a band that we write albums, mm-hmm. You know. We don't write like a single.
Yeah.
So to choose a single leading up to the album is always so hard for us because they're written in the sequence and so on. And now finally they can get the full album to just enjoy from start to finish.
Well, you guys did release 3 singles. I mean, obviously you said you're an album band, but you know, obviously to promote the album, get people excited, you do have to choose these singles. So the singles are interesting because this album is, in my opinion, I wrote some notes here, but I wrote Fearless. As a description of this album, it is just, I mean, and you've said in the press release for the album, you said, you know, Slaughter of the Soul is the most well-known album by you guys, but that's the most one-dimensional is what you said. And I found that to be kind of funny because, I mean, I love that one dimension, but, you know, you guys are playing like big time, going in depth with just prog rock. You guys have a whole different in-depth like story to this album. We can go into that. But how did you guys choose how to represent all of this with the singles?
Yeah, it's very hard, isn't it? I mean, we released three singles so far, but there's still more to come.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably going to do more than half the album as videos, for example, to give people the full, you know, texture of the record.
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard to choose those singles, for sure. Yep. First off, you want to like capture them with some, you know, reference points people already know, but still you want to intrigue them. I mean, I always think the listeners, you know, people that listen to At the Gates kind of have this, what you would call, as you said, fearlessness, like the curiosity mm-hmm. in them anyways. So they are prepared to be surprised or to be, you know, intrigued by the At the Gates album. Mm-hmm. I think by now, the ghost of Slaughter of the Soul is kind of gone in a way.
Totally. Yep.
Not that we don't like the album and that we don't understand that people like it, but we don't really have to use it as a reference point anymore because mm-hmm. we've gone so much further. And also, if you look back in our career with all our previous albums before Slaughter of the Soul, mm-hmm. that were more progressive in a way as well, even though we were not maybe able as musicians to actually portray our full vision, but we are now, you know? So I guess it's hard. I guess like the Fall Into Time kind of proved that a little bit, that, you know, that's a third single,
yep.
something that was more abstract, more epic, more cinematic in its approach, or orchestrated and so on, to pretty early on in the lead up to the album, give people an in-depth like feeling of, okay, they got something else coming here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of moody. I mean, just going through the whole album, I had notes here, just like things that popped into my head. I'm not a reviewer, but I just, you know, things I was listening to the record and just really diving deep into it into my head, like things that reminded me of. There's like the word rager, obviously, but then there's like prog jam, and then there's, you know, I was thinking, ooh, King Crimson, Pink Floyd, and then I was just thinking, the big word here with exclamation points. Saxophone.
Yeah, I hope people are ready for that. I mean, I really think people are, you know.
Yeah,
it's tried before in metal circumstances, I guess, but you know, for us it's that particular song. Mm-hmm. We needed and one more instrument to color it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that every instrument has its own emotional tone in a way. Yeah. And that's why we use so many on this record, all the strings, all the horns and all that. This song really, really spoke to us that it needed like a desperate cry somewhere there in the middle. And also to add improvisation into a very strict music genre is always intriguing, you know, and that's something we kind of like, okay, this is how we can do this, you know. But of course, you need proficient players like, you know, like that guy, you know.
Yeah. So that's track 4, Garden of Cyrus. So if people, you know, get the album today, they listen to it on this stream, you'll be able to kind of check that one out. And that's the one that I kind of labeled as the Pink Floyd King Crimson kind of, you know, prog rock jam. Obviously, you guys aren't going to go full Yes here. You're still at the Gates.
Yeah, but it's very important for us. You know, like that's a little bit like talk about like the challenge of this record for us has been exploring more stuff, mm-hmm. but keeping it at the Gates.
Yep.
You know, like Garden of Cyrus, for example. I would love if you played that song for any metalhead and mm-hmm. asked, like, okay, so which band is this? And they would probably say, this is At the Gates. Even if it sounds, you know, really weird in the arrangement, or whatever, it's still an At the Gates song. And that's very important for us. We don't want to lose that.
Absolutely, man. And you guys are a unique band because, well, obviously you're a new band because you're one of the best ever, but it's unique in your career because you had this first run that really gave you guys the name. And then you put out this iconic album, you end the career there, but you come back. And now at this point, your career, you are longer in your second run than you ever were in your first. So I just like to say congratulations in reestablishing yourselves. And also kind of as you were kind of kind of like pointing toward really just coming up from under the specter of that like expectation of Slaughter of the Soul, man.
Yeah, I think for us it was, you know, like the first part of the career kind of builded towards that record. Mm-hmm. We started out super experimental, super avant-garde, like, you know, whatever we want to call it. And then as the albums progressed, we became more and more streamlined. We trimmed more and more fat until we were down on what it is Slaughter of the Soul. You can't trim that anymore. That's like how would you do that? You know what I mean? It's like super trimmed, mm-hmm. and very, you know, compressed. And we couldn't go further in that direction without repeating ourselves, hence the break probably. And then when we come back, we can take a full perspective of what At the Gates is to us and bring the full picture.
Did you feel any pressure to live up to that, or did you try to shed that pressure?
At World in Reality was very, you know, that was written specifically in secrecy because of that.
Yeah.
To at least try to trick ourselves into thinking that people were not expecting certain things, you know? Yeah. No, but we felt, you know, we have progressed as songwriters mm-hmm. so much. We still know everything that we knew when we did Slaughter of the Soul, but we also know more, you know? So we can explore further things without losing that, as I said, the essence of the band. And after having done At War with the Reality, I think everything else is you know, it's been a flow. Because if you succeed in doing that, a comeback record after that kind of amount of time,
yep.
and following that kind of record, mm-hmm. then you can basically do anything, I guess, you know? And that's what makes this album so free, as you might want to call it.
I mean, it would have been easy for you guys to come back and then just do, you know, just kind of rest on your laurels, not put out any new things. Every 5 years, do the, you know, full album playthrough and just kind of be a nostalgia act. But you guys, and that's something that I will credit you guys, is like just pushing it. And with this new album, even further, to the point where it's probably super inspiring to you guys, I would assume, to just know that you can do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, a little bit like that. It's like that kind of feeling, the freedom, but also the possibility, like mm-hmm. with the musicianship we have in the band now compared to when we were 20 years old, you know?
Yep.
The level of songwriting, creativity, all that stuff kind of makes us so much more confident in what we do as well. That's also a reason that we could go further again without losing the core, you know?
Yeah. So this, you know, doing a little reading on the album, and something that ties it all together is a concept album, and it's exploring the dark revelations about pessimist philosophy. Now, I would love to hear and wax poetically about pessimist philosophy. I'm not that familiar. So, I guess my first question is this the first true concept album from At the Gates?
No, since we come back, everyone, like At War with Reality and To Drink from the Night Itself had concepts as well. Okay. And I think that we kind of wanted to prove ourselves with At War with Reality, that we were not doing it just for the, you know, like a rehash or whatever, you know, that like we were serious about this. Yeah. This is important for us. And, you know, we mean this. And since then, we kind of like, we can't go do it without doing a concept record, because now we kind of stepped up the game for ourselves. But it's also, you know, that challenge, both musically and also now we talk about the lyrics, that's what drives us. That's what gives us the incitement to actually start writing at all, to have this huge project in front of you. I mean, we could easily do Slaughter of the Soul Part 2, but would it be interesting? Not really, right?
Yeah, well, there were enough bands. I'll tell you this. There were enough bands after you guys to write Slaughter of the Soul 2 to...
But did they succeed?
So the idea of pessimist philosophy, why don't you kind of give me a little bit of an idea of what that means, I guess, without, you know, blowing my mind. I guess, what, just blow my mind, dude.
Well, I mean, it's such a huge topic to go in, like just explain it in like a few sentences, but... Okay. For me, it was like intriguing, because I never really, as yourself, I never really thought about that philosophy that much. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that, you know, it was just, you know, the glass being half empty kind of thing, you know?
Totally.
But I got introduced to it by Thomas Ligotti, the writer, and his book, The Conspiracy Against the Human Race. And there was so much stuff in there, in his, like, his essay, where he kind of, you know, philosophizes around the philosophy, that kind of intrigued me. And actually, this actually makes sense, some of this stuff, you know? And I'm, you know, I'm too old to actually, like, adhere to just one philosophy or one worldview or whatever. I pick and choose the things that, you know, that are good for me. But the idea is basically, you know, that humanity is the only species on the planet that's aware of their own mortality. And that constant fear is what drives us into almost like a paradox, hence that title, to act unhuman, to invent things that aren't there, you know, over-explain things, religion, different isms, you know, all that stuff, as basically defense mechanisms to not having to deal with the everyday suffering and pain, you know, because that's basically what life is about, really. Yeah. But if you live, if you kind of make peace with your defense mechanisms, and then you can live your life more fully and actually, as a pessimist, enjoy it more. So it has a little positive note there, actually.
So maybe just say, like, no, this is potentially all there is, and that's okay, and just enjoy life as it is. Almost sounds a bit Buddhist.
Almost, yeah. There are connections. Schopenhauer, one of the earlier, he read a lot of Buddhism. So, yeah, there is a connection there. But I would say, in general, you know, it's also the feeling that it's okay to be depressed or, you know, feel. It's the fear of being depressed and feeling that is hurting us, you know.
Ah. The fear of feeling like that and then having to mask that with some sort of outlet or some sort of, you know, creating a idea of what things really are. Maybe this is all they are, and that's okay. Yeah.
And that's okay, exactly. And that's why you will never find a disappointed pessimist. Plenty of disappointed optimists, though.
Oh, I see. I guess, I just didn't really understand, but putting it that way. So what was the book that you started with? What was it again?
The Conspiracy Against the Human Race by Thomas Ligotti. And that's kind of like an essay, as I said. Mm-hmm. It's not an actual philosophical work, but he is going through the history and explaining a lot of the centerpieces of it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a starting pack, basically, for it.
So beginner's guide to it. Nice.
Yeah.
So when you're reading this stuff, you decide, like, okay, let's delve into this for the album. So you come to the band and you come to Jonas with this idea, and he's like, I'm on board, or how did that go?
Basically, I when I had this idea, I kind of like just approached him first, not saying what I had in mind. I asked him, like, what kind of music do you see for this record? And he started talking about this dark, cinematic, big, huge, experimental album, progressive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that actually feels like it could resonate with this idea I have. And I started talking to him about it. And then we just fed up each other, basically. At the Gates has always been about getting emotions across to the listener. You know, our favorite emotions being melancholy and desperation, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. You know?
The music has to respond to the words, and the other way around. So there was a lot of talk about that. You know, we didn't want to have any, you know, just what we call transport riffs. You know, like to transport you from verse to chorus. Every riff should be something and have it carry an emotion, so to say, that fits with the lyrics of that song.
I like that you use the word cinematic, because that's one of the, you know, I just wrote a few words on each song and that I kept coming back to cinematic, and I guess just the overused word of epic was definitely one I used a lot.
Yeah, because we really wanted to create this, like, other dimension with this record, you know. And I think that also comes a little bit, you know, like, we had all this time on our hands. We can go back and revisit the songs a lot, lot more than we usually do, and explore stuff in them that, you know, we probably wouldn't have done before. And therefore, we kind of felt that, you know, it's compelling to really give the listener all this, especially in the pandemic, you know?
Yep, yep.
Give them an escape a little bit.
Well, that's something I was curious about. So I was reading a bit about the album with the release, press release, and it mentioned that, you know, back in 2019 you were writing this. How far back was the writing? Did you start it? And about when did you guys wrap up with the album?
I guess my earliest memories, because I mean it's always blurry, you know, being creative. You can't really like pinpoint a date, but I have memories from the Behemoth tour in 2018 almost already, yeah, starting to come together for this album, some certain songs. We had all the embryos basically by the start of the pandemic, but then went full in, as I said, during the spring and summer. Went into the studio in November and we're done in January.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did the recording during the pandemic, how was that as far as an experience for you guys? Was there any difficulties, anything like that? Why don't you tell me about that?
Well, the only like fear we had basically was because Adrian, our drummer, lives in London, England, mm-hmm. and to get him over was essential. You know, we didn't want him to record the drum parts on his own.
Yeah.
You know, we're a band still. Like,
yeah. It's cool.
Band. So, but as soon as we noticed, like, okay, it's going to be possible, then everything was super smooth. I mean, cool. Restrictions here in Sweden, there have been restrictions, but like you could always travel within the country. Mm-hmm. If necessary, like if you were going to work or if you took responsible measurements.
Yeah.
But we knew we were going to be able to pull it off if he would come over, and he did. So
nice. With the lockdown and the pandemic and the restrictions and things, you mentioned that you had so much more time to go back and revisit the album. Did it give you a lot more time and space as a band to just be creative? Or I'd imagine that would kind of be very helpful during a time when everyone's just so, you know, stressed or, you know, maybe just needs a release. You guys are in the mode where you can create something.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, honestly, I mean, this pandemic has, of course, been a horrible, horrible thing for a lot of people. A lot of deaths, a lot of like tragedy, a lot of people not being able to see their family. But there has been this like kind of like surprising, you know, good things with it, like, you know, introspection and stuff like that. People have been having more time on their hands. I wish we could have just hit the pause button anyway without, you know, without a pandemic.
Yeah.
To just sit back and like, okay, this is life. What can we do about this? But being creative is kind of, sometimes it could be a curse, you know, because it's really like it's a you care so much. It's so important for you, the art that you create. But in this time, it was really like a release, as you say, and also like an escape.
Yeah.
You could like shut out the rest of the world for a few hours, just go deep into this song and try to find the exact, you know, right arrangement of it that, you know. So that was a lot of rewarding work, actually, that came in at the exact right moment for us.
Awesome, man. Well, I think in the right moment is the right moment of this coming out, because as we speak, and you know, it's release date for the album, you know, things are starting to open back up across, at least here in the United States of America. Things are starting to open up. Tour dates are getting announced, you know, and, you know, it might start up a little bit slower, but things are opening up. And that's a beautiful thing. It's awesome. It's awesome. And, you know, I'm sure we'll see in the year to come or so. Hopefully we'll be able to see at the gates, play this album live. It's a positive thing to see this kind of become the soundtrack to the reopening of the metal world, man.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah. I guess, you know, for us, it's, we can't wait, of course, you know, but, it was, you know, as I said, it was a conscious decision to release it even because we didn't want to sit on it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course that was offered by the record label, you know, if you, but you know, for us, maybe it's the right time as well to release this kind of album. And mm-hmm. then wait a little bit for the shows so people can digest the album first.
Totally, man. So yeah, just release it. Let people learn the songs, and there'll be some people that listen to it and go get a little shell shocked, and they go, "Wait a second, this is my At the Gate. You can't do that." But then they listen to it a second, a third, a fourth time, and then they can just ease into it and really enjoy it. I loved it. I listened to it about five times this weekend, and I'm loving it, man. So congratulations.
It's definitely one of those albums that grows, you know, because there's so much details, there's so much layers, there's so much textures. As you said, the cinematic feel, it takes a while to get into it. So, but it's definitely one of those things that will grow on you, absolutely, in my opinion, my humble opinion.
So we're going to listen to the album here. But before we do, I kind of wanted to go track by track, if that's cool. And just talk about the track. So it's a 10-song album. And the album is called The Nightmare of Being. It's available now, and we're going to listen to it shortly. But track one, it starts with a beautiful acoustic guitar. And that's something that I thought was really kind of fitting of this album. Was that something that you wanted to just really, you know, pinpoint, like, let's start with this? Because it could easily just start with like a megaton riff.
Yeah, for us, it was a thing that we really wanted to give the listeners all, you know, like that emotional impact from the get-go, you know.
Yep.
And it's like preparing them for the mood that was going to, you know, hit them in a second. And then, you know, it goes into this like full, almost like Judas Priest's epic opening. And then it's full on At the Gates for that track. Mm-hmm. And we have Andy LaRocque playing guitar solo on that track as well.
That's so cool.
A part specifically written for him. It's it was great to have him back.
And that's the first song and the first single. So track two, we go with The Paradox. It is a rager. That's what I put, man. It is another rager. It has some keyboards, has some acoustic guitar. And this was the second album or the second single. And I was curious, what made you guys decide on this one as a single?
Well, this is actually not really. This sounds weird, but this is not really our decision.
Fair enough.
No, usually we have full creative control over everything, and we had it this time as well. But The Paradox was one of the first songs written for the album.
Oh, okay.
So we were kind of like, okay, yeah, this is an okay track, because we worked on it so many times. And we were like, okay, we kind of forgot how good it was.
Yeah,
it was the producer Jens. Andy recorded the guitars, and Per, the guy who records my vocals, they all three at different moments said, this is a single, man. This is like the monster of the record. You have to put this out, man. We're like, okay. You know, we usually are stubborn with the track sequencing, but if three individuals that we trusted to produce a record say the same thing individually, we're like, okay, we can do that.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, take your pick. It's cool. Do it. Yeah. You know, we're fine. And you're proud of it. So, we go into the title track, which is track three, The Nightmare of Being. And I, just wrote that this has kind of a moody beginning, and it goes from like super melodic to this lurching kind of moody mid tempo. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I would say it's pretty like, similar in the way it's built, like, the song Heroes and Tombs from At War with Reality. It's like the mid tempo, it's kind of introduces all the basic ideas, both for the lyrics and the music for the record, but it has a lot of atmosphere, and that, like, you know, the crunching end part of it that we never really did before. Like we've never been that heavy before, basically.
And it's heavy, man. It's very heavy. We're going into track four, which is something we actually spoke about, The Garden of Cyrus. And this is the prog rock jam that we were talking about, man. This is, you know, seeing you guys go kind of into the more King Crimson, and I wrote Pink Floyd even inspired moments. And this one was the big exclamation point saxophone. This must have been a fun one to write.
Yeah, it was amazing. I think for us, it's like using the normal At the Gate structures, but putting them into a different kind of arrangement. You know, writing At the Gate riffs, but then doing this with them instead to give it a different emotional approach. It was an important song for us to write. It took a while to get it 100% finished, because we had all these ideas where it could go. But
yeah,
a lot of people really, you know, have been digging this track almost the most because it's like the one you will remember, you know?
Oh, absolutely, man. That's certainly, put that on and people will kind of go, whoa, all right. Yeah. It might not be like the first single to draw people in, but once you, you know, you actually buy the record, put it on, that's, you know, no limitations right there is what it shows, which is a beautiful thing. Halfway through the record, we go into Touched by the White Hands of Death. And this one has a really cool orchestral beginning. And the word cinematic was what I wrote down. And you already mentioned that. So,
yeah, I guess, you know, like this is a song that's really written in the sequence a lot, you know, because that orchestrated intro, we really wanted to have that right after Garden of Cyrus, especially, as I kind of mentioned before, every instrument has its own emotional tone. And that lonely little flute on the intro there is really like, it doesn't matter, you know, on which instrument you would play it. You couldn't come up with that emotion that that little lonely flute actually, you know, gives you. And that's kind of what we were after there. Really like desperate and like, you know, anguish ridden, I would say, you know, and then it goes into a classic At the Gates storming track right after, you know, with the big choruses that you would know from Sword of the Soul and At War with Reality. So I think that song needed to close side A for us because we, of course, think vinyl.
Yeah.
Even if most people hear us streaming this. But yeah.
And that one, of course, it does have a heavy, heavy riff. Like that is one thing that is definitely, it ends, you know, you have the orchestral beginning and then just the like chunky, awesome, like, crushing riff. So I dig that. Going into, I guess if you were thinking vinyl, then side B, track one, but it is segmented track six if you're buying it on CD or streaming. The Fall Into Time, it's a third single. This one has kind of a proggy beginning, so kind of more cinematic. And there's a choir, which was pretty badass. And that's right before you come in. And this one I put almost jazz-like in the in the mid section there.
Yeah. I would say it has a lot of, this is like the epic of the record, basically. Yeah. And I mean, people have been almost expecting these kind of songs from us for a while now. We had, since the beginning, we had on the first record, we had Neverwhere. Second record, we had Primal Breath. Then we had The Night Eternal on At War with Reality and The Mirror of Black and Daggers of Black Haze on the last record. So people like, where is the epic song on the record?
Yep.
Here it is.
Here we go.
It's like really heavy and slow and dragging, epic, like really big chorus. And then we call it the Wishbone Ash part, actually, the middle part.
Yeah.
It's like the
Wishbone full, Ash part. Nice.
Yeah, full prog psychedelia almost until it goes back into the chorus again. But it's the biggest track of the record, I would say. Yeah.
And then we're going into seven, which is Cult of Salvation. And I was curious, you know, obviously there's an overarching theme for the album, the pessimism and stuff, but the Cult of Salvation, would you say religion? I mean, Cult of Salvation.
Yeah, it's religion and all the different kind of ideas of worldviews and explanations that, you know, might think that they can save the humanity from itself, basically. So it's like all about this idea of explaining things that are not there to try to save your sanity more than anything else from the, you know, from the specter of extinction, basically. Cult of Salvation is another one of the mid-tempo ones, but has a lot of classic At the Gate stuff in it and a full-blown tribute almost to Goblin, the band, you know, as cinematic, as you would say, again, probably in the middle part there.
I put, you know, and I don't know if anyone else would hear this, but I almost thought like kind of 80s goth inspired with even some violin in there. It was really kind of cool layers in that one.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of influences in At the Gates, and this is the first time we kind of show more of it. But as I said, again, the challenge is to still keep it at the gates. Which is, you know, but that's what, you know, the emotional aspect of it, where that comes in, I guess, you know? it isn't at the gate song clearly, but still it has other stuff in it as well.
Track eight is in my opinion the most distilled At the Gates song. It's that huge driving guitar melody that we know At the Gates. It's got the big riff. It's a rager. It's melodic. It's melodic death metal in the best, and At the Gates is the best at it. So I would say that is the like chef's kiss At the Gates song, if you want to do the trademark At the Gates right there.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's thank you, man. No, we really had the chorus nailed down, and then we wrote like the more like almost like old school death metal verses to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then Jonas came up with the huge orchestrated outro to it as well.
Yes.
The beautiful guitar solo, and it was like this almost all the components in one song, and it's really cool. I like it.
Track number nine, Cosmic Pessimism. I mean, even says it in the name there, pessimism. Starts off slow and moody, but this has, and I might be, you know, wrong in saying this, but this has the closest thing At the Gates has ever had to a, dare I say, dancey part.
Well, yeah, maybe. I would say, I think what you mean there is like the rhythm is...
I could dance to it.
Yeah, the rhythm is pulsating all the way from the song. And for this one, this is like a really big number for us to write, because it's also not, the lyrics are not written by me either. I'll go into that in a second.
Uh-huh.
But we really wanted to try something else that we have never done before. More oppressive vibe almost, like a mm-hmm. pulsating, vehemently, just repeating, you know, mantra-like mm-hmm. kind of songwriting.
Yeah,
we always go, you know, from verse to chorus too easily. You know, we wanted to just pound
it this
time. We listen to a lot of bands like Noi, Tangerine Dream, or like the krautrock bands here.
Okay.
And the spoken word, it basically comes from me having like an email interaction with Eugene Thacker, which is a professor that is dealing a lot with the pessimist philosophy. I wrote to him just to kind of get like a stamp of approval for the whole concept, mm-hmm. explaining my ideas. When we started emailing, he actually wanted to be part of the record as well. So
that's awesome.
I used some of his stuff from one of his books that is called Cosmic Pessimism. And then when I had his words down, I was just like, these words are his, they are very important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna speak them over the song instead. Like, you know, so that was it was really fun to write that one. It's very different.
Yeah,
I think then still it has a place on as a Gates record. You know,
absolutely, man.
We always had the strange tracks on all the records.
Yes, and it's you know, it's very, it brings you to a cool place before, you know, track 10, which is the final track, Eternal Winter of Reason. This is the finale. You know, it's a great At the Gates song. It's melodic. It's, I come back to this word, rager, but it ends with keyboards in like kind of this like special moment. So, you know, you start the album with this acoustic, beautiful thing, and then you end it with this beautiful keyboard.
For us, it was like, again, written in the sequence. As you say, it should be the closer, you know?
Yep.
Jonas had this idea that he wanted to have a song that just builds and builds.
Mm.
If you're listening closely, there's only one part that comes back, the chorus.
Okay.
All the other riffs just builds and builds until the end. They never mm-hmm. come back. But you never really notice it because you're just like intrigued by where it's going. And with lyrically and emotionally with the whole song, I wanted to kind of give just the feeling after, like, you know, my emotions after researching all this pessimism and writing this record, the emotional impact it had on me. I wanted to, you know, portray that onto the listener as like a closing to the record. So you can just feel what just happened.
Right.
I need to listen to this again. You know,
is it over? All right, let's flip it back on, man. Start it again. Let's go through this.
Something like that, yeah.
Unpack it. Awesome, man. Well, it's been awesome chatting with the album. And again, the album is called The Nightmare of Being. It is available now today on Century Media. You can order it on any physical media. You can stream it. You can listen to it right after this, actually. So we're going to listen to it. So before we jump into the album, do you have any final words for the At the Gates Legion out there?
At the Gates Legion, yeah, that's yes. Great. Well, I'm just super pleased to finally, you know, give this music to everybody, and I hope they enjoy it. Listen with an open mind and just embrace it, and let yourself be flowed into this other dimension for a while.
Amazing. So, Tomas, thank you so much for chatting with us today, man.
Thank you, man. It was great.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.